Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Criticisms of intelligent design are often based on misinformation and stereotypes. In order to counter these misconceptions, Dr. John West recently visited New Hampshire to take part in Evolution and Intelligent Design, an exchange, a panel at a recent conference sponsored by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. During two 90-minute sessions, Dr. West challenged some of the common preconceptions people have about intelligent design and urged them to hear the evidence for themselves. Today's podcast is taken from Dr. West's opening comments at the second session, where he outlines the three most important things people should know about the intelligent design and evolution debate. Dr. West is Associate Director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture and author of the recent book, Darwin's Conservatives, The Misguided Quest. Other participants in the panel discussion included noted evolutionist and biologist at Brown University, Ken Miller, and Mark Ryland of the Institute for the Study of Nature. The panel was chaired by Michael Dietrich, professor of biological sciences at Dartmouth College.
This in part reflect our conversations in the earlier session that you weren't part of, but also speak to what you've just heard. I'd like to offer three sort of major points just to suggest in this whole debate, particularly the public policy aspects. The first point that I'd like to make is, you know, this is unfortunately has become a polarized issue, and I think that especially when we come to polarized issues, it's important in the conversation to make sure that people can speak for themselves. Because one of the real hardships on either side of the debate is that people have really clear views, and you don't really want to hear what the other person says. You sort of want to, you know, find them out and stereotype them and saying what you think they're saying. And, you know, Dr. Miller is a very eloquent spokesperson for Darwinian evolution, and he spent most of his presentation today making, by my count, at least sort of 15 different claims about what intelligent design theorists or scientists or actually believe, or what are the positions of Discovery Institute. And I'm saying that he's very eloquent, but he's not Discovery Institute, he's not Michael Behe, and that if you really are interested in this debate, the thing that you, I think, most owe it to yourself is to actually read the writings on both sides. And fortunately, there are some great resources to do that. I list two books on one of the sheets that I handed out. One's Debating Design, From Darwin to DNA, published by Cambridge University Press, where you can see you know, one-on-one, sort of Michael Behe go at it, and Dr. Miller give his best shot, and, you know, see more considered, not soundbite views, allowing both sides to speak for themselves. Similar book by Michigan State University Press called Darwinism, Design, and Public Education, again, has a collection of views that are critical of intelligent design, as well as sort of the best philosophers of science, biologists, others who actually think that there is empirical evidence for design, making their case. And you know, there's no way that in 10 minutes I can rebut 15 assertions of what, you know, people made. Maybe you'll ask questions and we can talk more specifically about those. But the main thing is you need, I think it's really important to let people speak for themselves. And one of my biggest frustrations in this debate is that the scientists like Michael Behe and philosophers like Stephen Meyer don't often get the chance to speak for themselves. They're attributed, you know, things, or you pull a quote out of context or a quote without allowing them to explain themselves. So that's point one. People really do need to hear from the people themselves who support it. Second of all, I think it's really important that we define our terms. We've heard already today, you know, evolution, intelligent design, creationism. These three terms have so many different meanings, and one of the frustrating things I think about this whole debate is that people start with different background meanings of what the terms are, and so then a lot of the discussion really isn't debate or engaging discussion. People are talking past each other. And so I think it's really important to try to nail down, what do you mean when you mean evolution? I mean, evolution has at least five different meanings. If you look in that Michigan State volume, there's actually an interesting essay called The Different Meanings of Evolution that goes into in the literature. Everything from change over time to microevolutionary changes to universal common descent to Darwin's mechanism of sort of unguided evolution that really has no teleological end. And then, you know, intelligent design, you have different definitions. You have the one that Dr. Miller put up, which really is at variance with the one, if you read, I'd encourage you to read something like the Design Inference, published by mathematician Bill Dembski, published a peer-reviewed monograph series of Cambridge University Press. Read some of the articles in the other books I mentioned. Go to the Discovery's website, and you'll see that really what we're talking about, intelligent design, is something, you start with a premise that all biologists recognize. You see on this sheet, I actually have a quote from Richard Dawkins that says, biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. All biologists basically concede that things appear to be designed. The very limited question that scientists and philosophers of scientists who are sort of use the term intelligent design are talking about is, are there empirical markers to determine whether something is the product of an intelligent cause as opposed to an undirected material process? The question asked by intelligent design theorists is there empirical evidence that something is the result of a teleological process, a process that is goal-directed, or an undirected process of mutation and selection that actually can't select for future function? That's the limit of the question. Is there empirical evidence that something is the product of an intelligent cause or a non-intelligent process? How the designer or the intelligent cause used to actually develop it, whether it was through common ancestry, whether it was through, that is a very interesting question, but that's not the question posed by intelligent design theorists. And so this is why I say having definitions is really important, because otherwise you start debating straw men. Final point. I think it's important that we understand what the public policy debate is actually about. Contrary to what most people think, the public policy debate is not about whether intelligent design should be mandated. Discovery Institute actually does not favor the mandating of intelligent design, didn't favor the Dover policy, urged that it be repealed. Our advice was ignored. What we do favor is what we think is a common ground approach, and this is what we've been, Dr. Miller knows this because he's been on with some of our fellows testifying before the Ohio State Board of Education in 2002, is that teach Darwinism, teach the best evidence for Darwin's theory, but also teach some of the things, in fact, that Mr. Ryland was talking about. Some of the challenges to the neo-Darwinian mechanism, things that even evolutionists talk about, questions that are still like, do the processes that explain microevolutionary changes, like the size of finch beaks, or antibiotic resistance, if you just extrapolate those over time, do you get the major changes and the major features of life, which is that sort of standard gradualistic neo-Darwinism? There are a lot of scientists and people who do not support intelligent design who actually challenge that. That's in the literature. Is it a crime for students to learn about that? If it's written about in the science journals, why shouldn't it be allowed to students to hear about that? That is actually what Discovery Institute has proposed. That has been adopted in places, and where it's adopted, like in a school district in Wisconsin, they're not sued. And when the debate can get off of the sound bites and actually discuss that, like in Texas in 2003, the answer from the other side is, well, yeah, that is a real thing. But in Stephen Schaeferman, head of Texas Citizens for Science, who was the main person on the other side in Texas 2003, said that only graduate students on the cutting edge of science should study them. He admitted that the specific things that we mentioned are in the literature, yes, they're valid, but only graduate students should study them. That's a different answer than the claim that you usually find in the news media, that there really aren't any substantial, you know, questions about the neo-Darwinian mechanism. So, again, let people speak for themselves, define the terms, or else we're just going to be talking past each other, and that, unfortunately, that can be very frustrating for all parties. And then understand what the actual public policy debate is about. And it's not about whether intelligent design should be mandated. That was what it was about in Dover, and that's why we disagreed with it. Thank you.
That was John West speaking in New Hampshire. For ID the Future, this is Annika Smith broadcasting from the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.